Authority, CFAX 1070. Now, Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning. Thanks so much for listening. Guilty. The verdict in the legislature bomb trial that came down late yesterday, but it is not over. We've joined now by Michael Mulligan, defense lawyer with Mulligan Tam Pearson Law Corporation. Now, we usually have him on Legally Speaking tomorrow, but we thought we'd bring him in today because this is a blockbuster. Nice to see you again, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
All right, so defense lawyers for the couple found guilty of the bomb plot of the BC legislature 2 years ago say many important issues in the case have yet to be decided. So let's get into that in a moment, but what is your reaction to the verdict?
Well, in many respects, the most interesting part of this case is yet to come. Of course, in terms of whether these two physically did the thing that they were accused of, planting this bomb at the legislature, on that score, there wasn't a great deal of doubt. The RCMP actually had that captured from multiple different camera angles. So the jury's verdict isn't terribly surprising, given that it's the task of the judge rather than the jury to decide whether the accused were entrapped.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think as this unfolded, we heard a lot about it. There was some really great coverage of this, and you yourself said, give us that quote again that the I believe it was the RCMP had used to describe this pair.
They described the ideas they had when they started their massive undercover investigation as being harebrained and hokey. They were two drug addicts living on social assistance in Vancouver who apparently had ideas like making rockets out of cow manure or taking over a U.S. nuclear submarine, things which are bad ideas, but that they had no hope of putting into practice. And the police eventually became frustrated after spending 4 months with them, trying to get them to progress on some actual plan. They weren't moving anywhere. So the police wound up taking them away to a hotel suite in the Okanagan and putting them up for 3 days so that they could relax and focus on an actual plan. And then the police appeared to sort of encourage this idea of using explosives.
Okay, and that's where we're headed next. I just want to get into the actual the charges they were found guilty on. Conspiracy to commit murder, possession of an explosive substance on behalf of a terrorist group, and placing an explosive in a public place. How does it work when it comes that they were working for a terrorist group?
I think that was an issue about whether they amounted to that. For that reason, there were submissions made to the jury about what their intent or purpose was. These people didn't obviously have any actual connection to Al-Qaeda, although they seemed to at some point get a flag and hang that up and make that claim.
But how then did a jury find them guilty of possession of an explosive substance on behalf of a terrorist group if they wasn't a strong connection?
Well, it doesn't appear that they had any actual connection to the group, but I suppose it must have been that the terrorist group was the two of them, or perhaps they came to the conclusion they were doing it on behalf of this group, even though they had no actual connection to Al-Qaeda.
But, you know, this is a day and age when we're looking at Bill C-51, and, the Harper government is really banging the gong on, we need tougher laws to deal with terrorists in this country and beyond our borders. And now we're hearing that these people were actually working for a terrorist group. So I think the optics for some people are, gosh, maybe there's some teeth to this.
I think that's a very important point. And it's incredibly important the public pay attention to the sort of evidence that came out in this case. When it was first presented, it was presented as RCMP foil plot, and of course all of us naturally would have been worried that we were in some actual danger on Canada Day. But as the evidence has come out, it appears that just wasn't the case. There was never any actual danger. These two individuals lacked capacity to do even basic things in their lives, let alone manage to do something to produce cow manure rockets or take over submarines or actually make a thing which might explode. Could accomplish none of those things. So it is a very interesting perspective on it. And when there's it's an interesting perspective in the context of the current political debate about do we need additional state surveillance powers when the sort of things that, at least in this case, were being investigated were two completely pathetic individuals who lacked even the most basic capacity.
But the jury says that they were guilty of possessing an explosive substance on behalf of a terrorist group.
Yes, and ultimately, I suppose that's true in sort of some in the most limited way.
But they're the group?
They're the group. It would seem that they are the group, these two individuals.
Hi, Terry. You're on CFAX 1070. What do you think?
Well, I was just wondering, without sympathy for these people, if the if it'll go through a higher court, because it seems to me that they should be found not guilty or reduced the sentence on the grounds of diminished mental capacity, which I understand is a legitimate defense.
Interesting. Michael, what do you think of Terry's suggestion?
The charges may be stayed altogether. What's going to happen for the next month or so is the judge at the trial is going to hear evidence, more evidence, about what all the police did in order to finally get these people to do the thing they were convicted of doing. And if the judge finds that it's clear, it's got to be clear, that the police did more than simply provide an opportunity to commit an offense. If the police in this case are found to have actually produced the criminal offense or compelled them to do this, the result of that will be the judge directing a stay of proceedings and the accused would be released.
Okay, so this is the whole entrapment thing that we were discussing on Legally Speaking last year. So if I have this right, the conviction won't be entered until next week after the defense has a chance to argue that police entrapped the couple into the plot during an elaborate sting operation.
That's right. The concern about these things, these sort of sophisticated multi-month police investigations where they pretend to be some criminal mastermind in order to get somebody to confess or do something, that was dealt with last year again by the Supreme Court of Canada in the context of what's referred to as a Mr. Big investigation. That's where they have a pretend crime boss try to befriend somebody who's a suspect and then ultimately try to win their trust and get the person to confess to something. The Supreme Court last year found that those kind of confessions, ones that the police get from somebody after spending this long time building up trust and then getting the Mr. Big person to try and get them to confess something to join their criminal organization, are presumptively inadmissible. And the reason for that is that long experience has now taught us that those techniques result in false confessions. People will say that they were engaged in some previous criminal activity in order to get acceptance and join some organization. So those concerns, I would suggest, are even more real, where the police are not investigating somebody for some past crime, but they're dealing with them to see if they can get them to commit a crime. So you have to be even more careful. It's not a matter of the police saying, look, we're undercover here trying to establish if this was the person who, you know, blew up the airline or planted the bomb. They're engaged in this sort of long-term sophisticated undercover operation trying to see if they can get the person to commit a crime for which they could then be arrested.
They really call it Mr. Big operation?
They're called Mr. Big. That's right. They have a similar formula that they use in virtually all of those investigations where they have a fake crime boss played by an RCMP officer, and then they will inject somebody into the suspect's life who will befriend them. They will then try to build up trust by doing things like paying them money to complete tasks or do jobs, and then ultimately Mr. Big will confront the person and say, look, if you want to be part of our operation and make money doing it, you have to prove that you're the sort of guy that can join us by telling us about some dastardly thing you've done in the past. And when that's done to people, some people will just tell them that they've done something bad so that they can be part of this new organization. And people who are vulnerable drug addicts, like these individuals, who are finally getting some attention and encouragement, are exactly the sort of people who would be susceptible to that kind of an operation.
Fascinating stuff. The conversation here on Legally Speaking continues with Michael Mulligan, defense lawyer with Mulligan, Tam, Pearson Law. Stay with us.
Join the CFAX conversation on Facebook. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
The world is coming to Canada, and you can hear it on TSN Radio.
What a goal from Christine Sinclair!
FIFA Women's World Cup Canada 2015 starts June 6th with matches all month long across the country. Catch every Canada match live on TSN Radio, official radio broadcaster.
Listen all month long as Canada plays for the world title on CFAX 1070.
Hey, it's your anniversary in a week, right?
Yep.
Getting the missus anything special?
Well, I don't know. I got time. I'll think of something.
7 days later.
Happy anniversary.
No way. Already?
Yes.
Some things are closer than you think, like the JBI Pub and Restaurant at the James Bay Inn. Try their three-course dinner menu and experience great home-style cooking with fresh ingredients made from scratch. The JBI Pub and Restaurant at the James Bay Inn. Really good, really close. Corner of Government and Toronto.
I already have my hands full making sure my business runs smoothly. Good thing business banking with VanCity is easy. I can do my banking online or with their mobile app. Plus, they have accounts that make it easier to manage cash flow, which means I can focus on the important stuff, like getting today's orders out the door.
At VanCity, we see big value in small business. From smart advice to practical tools to flexible accounts, we have what you need to help your business grow. Visit vancity.com/smallbusiness. VanCity, make good money.
Ford really helped make things easy when I shop for my new car. For starters, there's the 0% APR lease or purchase financing on the 2015 Fusion, Focus, and the new Edge. Plus, there are standard features like air conditioning, hands-free sync, and rear-view camera. And to top it all off, you can now recycle your eligible 2008 or older vehicle for up to an additional $2,500 with Recycle Your Ride. Easy, right?
With offers like these from Canada's best-selling automotive company for the last 5 years, it's easy to get into a Ford. Visit Ford.ca for details.
It's the roofing season, and right now at the Home Depot, get 10% off a pallet of top-quality Timberline HD in-stock roofing shingles from GAF, North America's largest roofing manufacturer. With superior protection and strength and a lifetime limited warranty, GAF delivers quality you can trust. 10% off GAF Timberline HD in-stock shingles, only at the Home Depot. Visit the Pro Desk in-store or HomeDepot.ca for details.
How do you get all these people to clam up? Invite them to the BC Shellfish and Seafood Festival, starting June 12th. There's plenty of shellfish to enjoy here, a whole bounty of seafood. Come to the beautiful Comox Valley for 10 sumptuous days of BC's largest shellfish and seafood festival, with gala dinners, tours, and more, celebrity chef appearances, the Comox by the Sea celebration, and endless opportunities to raise a little shell. For accommodation tickets and info, head to bcshellfishfestival.com.
Our real estate market is hot. Have you noticed how fast the sold signs are going up? Wouldn't it be nice to have a commission break when a property sells so quickly? This is Kevin Ramsey, lead realtor of Fair Realty's Sweet Home Victoria real estate team. All of my listing contracts have commission reductions if the property sells within a month. A quick sale means less work and less advertising for me, and transferring the savings to you makes perfect sense. So remember, when it's time to sell your sweet home, go to sweethomevictoria.com or find Sweet Home Victoria real estate team in the Yellow Pages.
If you see news happen, call the CFAX 1070 Newsroom, 250-381-6397. That's 381-NEWS. Your voice, your time. It's Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan, defense lawyer with Mulligan Tam Pearson Law Corporation. This is what we're chatting about. Defense lawyers for the couple found guilty of plotting to bomb the BC legislature 2 years ago say many important issues in the case have yet to be decided. John Nuttall and Amanda Cordy were found guilty by a jury yesterday of conspiracy to commit murder, possession of an explosive substance on behalf of a terrorist group, and placing an explosive in a public place. Right, so I want to find out why they had to be found guilty first before the court could look at whether or not the RCMP are guilty of entrapment?
Well, the RCMP wouldn't be guilty of it, whether they engaged in entrapment.
Engaged in, okay.
That comes out of a Supreme Court of Canada case called Regina versus Mac from a few years ago. And what it makes clear is that the first thing to be decided is, did an accused do the thing they're accused of doing? So that's what the jury would be responsible for. Did they do the thing? Did they put the the bomb in the bag and put it at the legislature, right? That's what they're concerned with.
Whether or not they were led by the nose.
Whether they were led by the nose, threatened into doing it, how that came about. And then entrapment is a separate issue for the judge. And entrapment is really a way that the court protects itself from being used in an abusive way. So that is an issue for the judge, and only an issue if the jury first finds that the person did the thing.
But it seems, you know, just from a layman's mind here, that one would, and I get the idea of, you know, protecting the court and all, but it just seems, you know, if they wouldn't have actually gotten to the point of planting the explosives and all the rest of it, had they not been led into it, that maybe the court shouldn't, case should not have been heard at all.
Well, I mean, the other thing to remember is this. One of the things which a jury trial introduces into the criminal process is a sense of community values. And juries don't, of course, give reasons for how they come to their decision. A judge, before a jury goes out, would give the jury instructions and say, here's how you should do your job, and here's the evidence you should consider. But part of the history of the jury system is that you can have circumstances where people in the community that are serving on a jury, for whatever reason, just conclude, look, this is inappropriate. We have a doubt about this. We find the person not guilty. And they're never called upon to explain how they came to that decision or why they came to it. So you can have juries doing what's sometimes referred to as jury nullification, just saying, look, this is unacceptable. We're finding the person not guilty. And in this case, it was obvious that the Crown had a concern that the jury might do exactly that, because the entrapment issue was only for the judge, not for the jury. But those themes were so clear in this case, the Crown here actually disobeyed a direction from the trial judge not to be making submissions to the jury about entrapment. The Crown disobeyed that direction and decided to make some submission to the jury about that issue.
What'd they say?
Well, they made some submission about how, in their view, in their submission, that it wasn't entrapment. They weren't entrapped. Now, that resulted in the judge seriously rebuking the Crown for doing that, but it would be some indication when he was called upon to explain why he did that, contrary to the judge's direction. He gave an explanation that referred to that was referred to in the newspaper, and people might have, you know, had that as a concern. So it's a case where you had the Crown making submissions to the jury, trying to persuade them not to do what they can do, even though they're not told about that in the instructions. The judge would just say, look, you have to be satisfied of these elements of the offense and make your decision accordingly. But because juries don't have to give reasons, sometimes they will do things which don't seem to be in accord with what the judge has told them, and that's their prerogative.
Fascinating. Let's see what Jack has to say. Hi, Jack. You're on CFAX.
Hi. A few things. First, I'm surprised we've gone through this whole case for about 2 months now, and I followed it in the media, and this is the first I've heard that the whole issue of entrapment doesn't come to the jury, because the whole case is about entrapment. I don't know how I've read about it and listened to it and seen it on TV for 2 months and was never told that the issue of entrapment does not go to the jury. Mm. I just heard about that yesterday for the first time.
Yeah, interesting stuff, isn't it? Let's put that to Michael Mulligan.
Question.
Sorry, Jack?
That's a media question. I don't know why the media never told us that.
Well, we did discuss this last week on Legally Speaking, but we discussed the potential for entrapment. But as Michael had pointed out to us, they had to be found guilty first.
Yes, now we know that. But I've followed this case for 2 months. I've read about it in the TC. I've heard about it on CFAX. And CFAX has always presented this case, and so has the rest of the media, as if it's honest or straight. You know, these two terrorists were accused of planting a bomb. The whole thing is a farce. It was a farce from day one.
Well, Jack, I'll give us a little bit of credit, because we did get into entrapment last week, and it's stuff that's being unveiled here. It's a learning process for a lot of people in terms of how odd this case is, Michael.
That's true, and part of it is that because the entrapment issue is, as a matter of law, an issue for the judge. It would be improper for lawyers to be making submissions to the jury about entrapment or how it would apply or not apply. And in fact, in
they weren't allowed to.
They weren't allowed to. And in fact, in this case, the judge apparently told the lawyers, don't be making submissions about entrapment to the jury.
So the media in turn can't, you know.
Well, I mean, and despite that, the Crown appeared to ignore that and nonetheless did that, resulting in being a rebuke from the judge for injecting that into the jury's process when that's not part of their function.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happens now?
What's going to occur is additional evidence is going to be led by the defense about what went on here and why. The defense counsel have indicated that they're going to call some of the higher-ups from the RCMP to come in and explain what was going on. Why were you spending months doing that with these people? Why would you do things which would encourage them to engage in this conduct?
Well, isn't that in question still, though, whether or not they encouraged them? Or is that apparent?
The evidence is that three separate RCMP officers who were undercover following this weekend away in the Okanagan in the hotel suite, once they eventually came around to the issue of or the idea of bombs rather than cow-powered rockets or the submarine, three different officers on the evidence apparently said things to them to try and encourage that, saying, well, yes, that's a manageable idea, or that's the sort of thing that you could do, words to that effect, encouraging them to do that, and then discouraging them from trying to use cow dung, because that's still what they had in mind, and telling them that they should use a C4 explosive rather than cow manure.
What do you think we're going to see here from the RCMP? What? Read the tea leaves for us.
It'll be fascinating to see those things put directly to them. I mean, that evidence came out in the course of the trial before the jury, because some of the issues were relevant to whether they had the intent to do this for a terrorist purpose, for example. So some of that was led, but now they'll be able to get right into that issue before the judge.
Hi, Don. Your last call on CFAX. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Pamela, and to your guest. I do find this whole thing really intriguing. I think for myself and perhaps your guest, if you can answer the question, this is more about the tactics of the RCMP that will soon be, what would you say, judged upon. I accept the police entrap continually on what I would consider lower manners, so to speak, whether it's traffic or I think they used to entrap the Johns to do with prostitution, like kind of set them up, and also the pedophiles, they'll lure them into a situation and then charge them, which is acceptable. But for myself, and I'm curious what your guest thinks, in this matter, though, the police actually cultivated, criminal behaviors and identity for the two accused.
Let's put this to Michael. We were up against the clock here. Thanks, Don. Quick answer from you, Michael.
Well, it certainly seems clear in the evidence that's come out that what eventually happened would not have happened but for the RCMP's involvement. The question for the judge will be whether the police went too far in getting them to do that. And if they did, the result would be a stay of proceedings.
They walk free.
Correct.
Any repercussions for the RCMP?
There wouldn't be a direct legal repercussion. It's not an offense for them to do it, but you can certainly imagine that there would be questions asked about things like their budget and what are they doing and how are they using their resources and why would they conduct themselves in this way when there's lots of actual crime available to be investigated.
Fascinating stuff. Michael Mulligan is our regular on Legally Speaking now. He's normally on Thursdays. We're going to be all over this. He's a defense lawyer with Mulligan Tam Pearson Law Corporation. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
See you next